Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
After a 17-year hiatus, legendary South African band Plum is making a triumphant return with their brand new single, Don't Stop Believing. This makes their first release since 2005 and signals a bold new era for the iconic group, who have been at the forefront of South Africa's alternative music scene since 1996. Originally formed by seasoned musicians Kevin Leisha, Troy Duggins, and Waz Leisha, Plum quickly established themselves as pioneers of an electric sound, blending trip-hop, acid rock, nu metal, and alternative funk. Following the release of their last album, All or Nothing, the band members pursued other musical ventures, collaborating with South African greats such as Arno Karstens, Chris Chameleon, Josie Fields, and Vonda Boom. Now, original members Kevin and Waz have reunited, joined by new drummer Ryan Greenwood, and longtime sound expert Stevie G, rekindling their unmistakable chemistry and passion for performance. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Kevin Leisha from Plum. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Oh, great. Thanks, Barrett. I am in Johannesburg and I'm doing really well. How are you doing?
I'm good. All good, thank you. So let's dive straight in. How or where or what was inspiration behind the name Plum?
Wow. Okay. We started a band, myself and Waz, as school friends. You know, we're cousins actually, as a school band. That band was called Instant Karma, which was stolen from a John Lennon song, of course. And we did mostly covers, and then at one point we switched over to originals. But there was, you know, shifting of members, and then kind of we broke up and reformed, and the new name Plum. We went through a few options. We settled on Plum. At the time, Warren's bass was a little bit of a maroon plum color, and somehow that came through, and we settled on Plum. It just felt something nice and short, to the point, easy to remember.
So you referenced that you were with Waz in various bands, and then reiterations of different type members. And then Plum came to be. So how was that then next step to becoming professional and diving into the music world?
Actually, so the very first iteration of our band, we were just like school band, early days. I think we started around standard seven, so about 14, 15 years old. Nothing professional about that. But then when we did form this Instant Karma band, even as early as standard nine matric, it was a cover band, but we were playing gigs. So we were actually earning some money playing covers, Thursdays and Friday nights all through matric. And even Saturdays, you know, sometimes three gigs a week. Funny enough, when we went like to full original music and kind of became Plum, I would say in a weird way, the income dropped a little bit, because at that point in the mid 90s in Joburg, a cover band was kind of earning more than unless you were top tier original band. Yeah. But we were always very serious about our music from the get go. We were serious about it. And I think switching to originals was the natural step. It made sense to, you know, cut your teeth learning covers, playing a lot of like other people's songs, getting to know your instruments and work as a band that way. And then start writing your own songs.
So you were creating for a number of years from 1996 through to 2005, and then you took a hiatus or took a break. What was the inspiration to take the break and then reform now?
Sure. So we did end up eventually kind of throwing all our eggs in the music industry basket. And that was, I think, in a way, a little bit taxing, because it became very difficult to live, and the pressure on the band to earn a living for three people and support families and so on was actually, it was quite high. So somewhere around mid-2005-ish, maybe a bit earlier, we all had found other ways to earn money. You know, we had to. And eventually those other ways became, you know, more what you're doing with your time than the band. We did the album, and I think we pushed hard to get to that point where we could at least say, okay, the All and Nothing album is done and we're happy with it. We did a tour. And then what was initially just going to be a little break for a year, like let's just find our feet, kind of just carried on. At that point, Troy, who was our drummer from the very beginning, he went in a certain direction that wasn't really music industry related. And myself and Woz continued playing with other bands. I produced an artist called Josie Field. I worked very closely with her. Woz ended up playing with Arno Carstens. And then via his connection with Arno, I ended up joining that band as well. And then we ended up playing with Chris Chameleon. So we got a lot of work as session musicians playing. And then Woz ended up playing with Josie. So we played together in a lot of different projects. And then we did that for years. You know, that was a little bit more sustainable financially. I don't know why we just didn't do Plum. I think because originally Plum always felt like the three of us. It was Troy, Warren, and myself, and it felt like a trio, and we all brought equal parts, energy to the band, that when, you know, Troy went his own way, it just didn't feel like Plum anymore. But then during lockdown, we, you know, all the bands like from the 90s started chatting to each other, and actually Woz got COVID pretty badly during lockdown. He ended up in hospital.
Okay.
And it was actually like pretty serious, you know, so we had a bit of a scare, and I think that ignited like a shit, dude, when you're better and you're out of hospital, we're going to fucking go do our stuff again. And that was like the spark. And then we did that. He came out and we made a track, and we didn't quite push it out, but something started to happen. And also Woz started playing with Vorne Boom as a fill-in bass player for Wade, but more as a permanent bass player for Blood Honey, which is Sito's solo project, or his other band.
Yeah, yeah.
Other band, I think.
Yes. Got a few.
So Ryan, the drummer, and Woz just clicked, and Woz said to me, this guy could drum for Plum. This guy's got the feel and what we, you know, the kind of drummer we would want. And he was 100% correct, because from the first jam with Ryan, it just clicked.
Okay, so let's unpack your creative process presently. In creating a song from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes, how do you guys come together to create that? Is it easy every time? Are you equal parts contributing? Let's unpack that journey.
To be honest, we haven't actually written a hell of a lot of songs since we've come back. A large part of the operation was like, let's learn how to play the stuff we had.
Okay.
And update it and fresh it. But we have written a few. They all come out differently. Normally one of us will get the spark of a song, be it a riff or a chorus or, you know, a couple of verses, something that you can take to the other guy. In the case of the latest single, Don't Stop Believing, Warren came with the kind of had an idea for the verse riff and like a pre-chorus, but nothing much more than that. But he had the lyrics for the verse. And then once we start jamming together, you know, his ideas spark ideas in me. I come up with something. He goes, oh, that's nice. And it is very collaborative. And subsequently, you know, I've taken a couple ideas to him, and they are starting to blossom into some songs. And I think the writing process is going to speed up from this point on. I think we're going to end up with a lot of new music very shortly.
So what's coming up over the next few months? What are the plans?
We'll be working on and releasing some new songs. We're trying to, you know, keep those flowing. The days of making an album are maybe not so high priority in the digital world nowadays. You don't have to release all 12 songs at once. So you just write, release. We see that. And then once you've collected enough, you can package them and call it an album.
I love me a CD. I know in South Africa, it's not very easy to get CDs anymore because there's no really shops to do so. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the listening from song to whatever number, the all those type of elements. I'm not sure if you're aware, you may or may not be, that around the world, massive comeback of physicals. In last year in the UK or the year before, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. CDs are an upsurge as well. So in the UK, there's a basket of products that people exchange goods on. And based on those exchanges, obviously there need to be high exchanges for it. These, they gauge tax, some sort of tax element. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, that product is now back in the basket.
Back in the basket. Okay. Yep.
Cassettes are flying up. So, and then we've got these streaming platforms that you reference. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
Well, obviously, I was aware of the vinyl, the increase in vinyl. And I think that's been a steady growth over the last decade. I don't know if we're seeing the CD uptake in South Africa. I don't think we are. Cassettes as well. I mean, cassettes would be obviously a novelty item for Gen Z, having probably never physically handled one. Not the best sounding medium for music. I mean, we all grew up with cassettes and I love cassettes.
You know what I hated about cassettes is when they unraveled and then you had to try and turn the thing.
I've got a few cassettes from back in the day. And I mean, I swear they're like half a semitone too fast or too slow and sounds like everything's going through a chorus pedal. they don't hold out for very long. Be interesting to see. I mean, probably vinyl. If we went anywhere, it'd probably be vinyl. I think that's the best option.
What have you noticed the difference for you personally as an observer, having been in the industry besides the digital world, obviously the other aspects, since you guys were collaborating and creating in the 90s, 2000s to now, what other differences have you noted?
So there's a massive difference in the affordability, availability, and quality of recording. When we first started, it was something you saved up for to get maybe 2 days in the studio, you know, if you could even afford it. And what you did cost a lot of money, and what you came out with was a very true reflection of your actual musical ability. So you best go in prepared. And to be honest, the quality was not really on a par with international stuff in terms of recording, because obviously they were working on big SSL consoles and the best mics and had way more time and everything. And we were like going into some sort of demo studio because that's what we could afford and banging it all out in 2 days. So today that is no longer the case. Today anyone can really use a laptop and a decent set of mics, and it's all affordable, and spend way more time perfecting whatever product it is you want to put out. And then obviously the digital tools are on another level. So it's a little bit sad sometimes not knowing when you hear a record by an artist, whether that was actually played that way or is it just digitally kind of finessed into that thing.
Yeah.
You know, something is a little bit lost in the industry to me. Everything is a little bit less impressive. Almost like what we're starting to see with AI, where you don't know if what you're watching is even real or not, so therefore should I be impressed by it, or is it just something manufactured with a couple of clicks? Having said all that, it's still wonderful that, you know, young artists can put out quality recordings. If not entirely by themselves, they can get a lot of the way by themselves. And we also hope to, reap the rewards of all of this. I have worked in studios for many years and have had access now to recording tools. But I can also see that it's becoming less and less necessary to use major, huge rooms or, setups. You can get a great recording from some of the most weird little corners of a room. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Now, I was going to like maybe expand on that a little, you were talking about, like, how is music received? And this is where I feel like, even me personally, I feel like we're all overexposed. And that's a little bit sad. It's just so available. Like my little subscription to my music streaming platform gives me everything, yet not one record means as much to me as that album that I bought as a 13-year-old saved up and bought it.
That comes in again with the journey of the physical and having that whole experience. So, And also, I've heard that a reason a lot of the younger people are diving into that world is because they are tired of having everything on their phone. They want something different and new. And for us, it's not different and new because it was always there. But for them, it is. It's new. So I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 5 hours, I know your answer would be different every time. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five songs by other artists once you finish this conversation, and if you can't think of songs, then just five artists, who would those five artists be? And if you can think of songs, what would the songs be?
Oh, you're going to embarrass me, but I'm going to be honest. I only discovered Benson Boone this morning. Like, I heard that song somehow, yeah. You know, his big hit.
Yeah, yeah.
And somewhere on my feed this morning came his performance at the Grammys, and I kind of watched through, and I was like, who's this kid? Like, front flipping off pianos and hitting these notes.
Yeah.
Hitting these notes so great. So, you know, like, probably I'll go and check him out a little bit more. I'm not a huge pop music consumer, but something about him seems to scream a little bit legit to me for the one clip that I've watched. I always have time for The Cure. I know I've been listening to them for 100 million years, but I always have time for The Cure, and they've released some new music, which I'm still enjoying. I always have time for Tool. Similarly, I feel like if they're like one of those movies that has time travel and a bunch of like, you know, little Easter eggs in it. So every time I listen to a Tool song, it's like, whoa, okay. I hear it in a different way. Let me think what else is jumping to mind at the moment. You know, I'm falling back on old favorites. Re-looking at Led Zeppelin recently, I went through a huge Zeppelin phase, and I think I actually listened to so much Zeppelin that I stopped listening to Zeppelin for many years. But now I've been like kind of revisiting them, and the arrangements and the work that those guys put out still stands to this day. The production, it's phenomenal. And Fiona Apple, it's a left of center, but I enjoy your production, and I've enjoyed your stuff for years.
So, Kevin, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Oh, wow. What would I like to say to the whole world? I wish everybody could just chill down. I feel like we are in a very precarious place as humanity right now. Things seem very volatile, you know, politically. Looking at the world, it's like a hot pot ready to explode. So I guess I wish I could just ask everybody to just take a deep breath and maybe be a little bit more empathetic.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.